The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the April-May issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to start on page 8, Who's Who, second line. And we're going to start off with Flo J. Johnson, LSU Tigers, guard, height 5'10". She was born November 3rd, 2003, hometown Savannah, Georgia. Johnson celebrated a national championship with the Tigers in 2023, the same season she was named SEC Freshman of the Year. She logged two more Elite Eight appearances in 2024 and 2025, averaging 18.6 points per game this season. In LSU's Elite Eight loss, Johnson scored a career-high 28 points. Did you know, though, LSU holds the record for the most points scored in an NCAA women's title game. The Tigers dropped 102 points in their win against Iowa in 2023. Next, we have Rory McIlroy, PGA Tour. His height is 5'10". His weight is 160 pounds. He was born May 4th, 1989, hometown Hollywood, Northern Ireland. In April, McIlroy won his first Masters to complete a career Grand Slam. He beat Justin Rose in a one-hole playoff for his first win at Augusta in 16 tries. For his career, McIlroy has 29 PGA Tour wins and $104 million in prize money. Did you know, though, only five other golfers have completed a career Grand Slam? Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods have all won the Masters, the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the British Open. And finally, we have Mira Andreeva, tennis player. Her height is 5'9". She was born April 29th, 2007, hometown Krasnodarsk, Russia. Andreeva was named the WTA Newcomer of the Year in 2023. In 2024, she won a silver medal in doubles at the Paris Olympics and reached the semifinals of the French Open. She has two WTA 1000 tournament wins in 2025, putting the 18-year-old at number 7 in the world. Did you know? Venus Williams, Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova, Naomi Osaka, and Emma Raducanu have all been named Newcomer of the Year by the WTA. Page 16. What if Greg Popovich is a lot of things? A great coach. He just stepped down after 29 years and 5 championships with the Spurs. A tremendous front office executive, a level-headed wise man who often served as the voice of reason even in the most hectic of times. He also can be a little bit, let's call it, cantankerous. Plenty of referees who made questionable calls and sideline reporters who asked questionable questions felt his wrath. If he was that cranky when things were going well, imagine how Popovich above might have been if he hadn't overseen a dynasty. Things could have turned out that way were it not for a bit of bad luck. At least it seemed like bad luck at the time. In 1966, San Antonio center David Robinson was one of the best players in the NBA. He was one season removed from his first MVP award and was anchoring a team that was coming off a 59-23 season campaign. Robinson was slowed by a back injury at the start of the 1996-97 season. He finally returned in December, but in just his sixth game, he broke his foot. Without Robinson, the team crumbled. Coach Bob Hill was fired during the season, replaced by Popovich. The Spurs finished with an abysmal 20-62 record and ended up in the draft lottery, which they won. Their prize was Wake Forest center Tim Duncan, who would win two titles with Robinson as he replaced the admirable as San Antonio's go-to big man. But what if Robinson hadn't broken his foot? The Spurs would likely have had a decent season, which would have totally shaken up the draft lottery. The team that ended up with the second pick in 1997 was Philadelphia. Had the 76ers instead picked first, they would have been able to secure Duncan to a roster that already included future Hall of Fame point guard Allen Iverson. The pairings of the answer and the big fundamental would have immediately catapulted the Sixers to an elite level. Throw in a few role players, and it's likely that the trophies Duncan helped collect in Texas would have ended up in the city of brotherly love. With championships rolling in, the 76ers never would have adopted their process strategy of fielding weak teams to amass draft picks. And if tanking hadn't become a viable strategy, the Spurs might never have been bad enough to win the lottery and draft Duncan's eventual heir, Victor Wembanyama. Standing pat, Tim Duncan was going to be a star no matter what happened to David Robinson's ankle. But Tom Brady? His ride to megastardom required some help. When Brady was drafted in the sixth round of the 2000 draft, the New England Patriots didn't exactly view him as a franchise savior. Coach Bill Belichick said, we'll just put him out there with everybody else and let him compete and see what happens. Not really a ringing endorsement, especially considering that the Pats already had a Pro Bowl quarterback, Drew Bledsoe. But Bledsoe suffered a severe chest injury two games into Brady's second season. Belichick had no choice. He had to turn the team over to Brady. The rest was history. He won six Super Bowl titles in New England, plus one in Tampa, and retired as the NFL's all-time passing yardage leader. If Bledsoe hadn't been hurt, there's no guarantee that Brady would have gotten a shot. As a rookie, he made just one appearance, completing one pass, the same number as the team's punter. And if Brady had never been given a chance to play, and if he and Belichick hadn't built the team into a juggernaut, think of all the things we wouldn't have. Cranky coaches wearing hoodies with the sleeves cut off. At least Pop wore a suit. All those stories about Brady's healthy living and his patented avocado ice cream, which contained no cream and way too much ice. Perhaps the biggest impact would have been on the lucky collectors who were able to get their hands on Brady's rookie card. In 2021, one sold for $3.1 million. That broke the record for a football card set a few months earlier by the same Brady rookie card. That broke the record set a few months earlier by, well, take a guess. Bronx Bummer. So we've seen what would happen if a couple of infamous injuries had never occurred. But what if one had still happened, just at a different time? Heading into the 1996 season, veteran Tony Fernandez was set to be the Yankees' shortstop, but in spring training he broke his elbow. New York owner George Steinbrenner wanted to trade a young middle reliever to Seattle for light-hitting Felix Fermin, but his advisors talked him out of it. Instead, the job went to Derek Jeter. The 21-year-old grew into the job and became a Hall of Famer. Now imagine what would have happened if Fernandez had gotten hurt at a crucial time of the season. Not only would Jeter, below, have been stuck in the minors, but Steinbrenner would likely have gone through with his original trade idea, getting Fermin from the Mariners in exchange for that reliever. His name was Mariano Rivera. So the M's would have ended up with the greatest closer ever. Jeter would have seen his career arc slowed, and the Yankees, whose last World Series title had come in 1978, would have continued to search for talented players to end that drought. that unhappy fan base would have kept attendance down, and that would have meant less money for Steinbrenner to splash on players, so we'd have to scour the sports world for overlooked players. One possibility, a former draft pick of the Montreal Expos, who was once touted as potentially the one of the greatest catchers ever before choosing another sport, Tom Brady, who, thanks to Drew Bledsoe's continued good health, would have been looking for a job. What if? Fire the torpedo bats. The evolution of equipment has always been an arms race in Major League Baseball, and the Yankees' new lumber kicked off the next Cold War in the hunt for October glory. The Bronx Bombers have a new weapon, and it might scuttle the hopes of any team looking to stop their charge towards the World Series. It's the torpedo bat, and it was the biggest story of the beginning of the 2025 Major League Baseball season. The revolutionary lumber differs from a traditional bat in its shape. Torpedo bats are fatter in the middle, then taper off at the end. That allows for the sweet spot to go where the hitter tends to make the most contact, as well as cutting down on the bat's weight, causing it to be easier to swing. The idea came from a physicist from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Several Yankees, including Paul Goldschmidt on the left, used the bats in their season opening series against Milwaukee, in which New York hit 15 home runs, including 9 in one game. Through 34 games, the Bombers, had a major league best 57 homers. That put them on pace for 272, which would break the team record. And they did all of that with their best slugger, Aaron Judge, opting to use a regular bat. All of that firepower is enough to give the rest of the league, not just the Brewers, a sinking feeling. Are you kidding? Nope. The NWSL is increasingly being dominated by younger players who are making the most of the chance to go pro. As the United States women look to stay atop a tough, crowded global soccer landscape, there has been increasing focus on elite player development. College programs once helped the United States gain an advantage over the rest of the world, but that advantage is long gone. The NCAA season is relatively short, at barely 3 months. The level of competition is uneven. That's enormously different from the rigorous European academy model, where players train with professionals from a very young age, providing early pathways to professional opportunities. As a result, more and more young American players are joining the NWSL instead of playing in college. They now share a junior sisterhood of sorts. In one case, it's an actual sisterhood. Alyssa and Giselle Thompson were born a year apart but grew up more like twins. We're kind of together, 24/7, says 20-year-old Alyssa, but it's really nice. They both ran track. They played soccer together, quickly becoming two of the most prominent female youth players in the country, honing their skills alongside boys on the MLS Next team near their home in Southern California. They plan to stay together after high school. Going to college together, going to Stanford, that was always the plan, says Giselle, 19. But the plan changed. In October 2022, Alyssa made her debut with the United States senior and national team at the age of 17. Stepping onto the pitch before a massive crowd of Wembley Stadium against England, a few months later, she decommitted from Stanford and instead decided to enter the NWSL. She became the first player ever drafted straight from high school when she was taken number one by Angel City Football Club. It was one of the hardest decisions that I've had to make, Alyssa says. But ultimately, it came down to what I wanted to do and what my dream was, and that was being a professional athlete. Later that year, her sister decided that her best path forward was going to pro too. A few days before her 18th birthday in December 2023, Giselle joined her sister at Angel City. It was so perfectly aligned with us being in L.A., being close to our family, and playing for our hometown, Giselle says. The NWSL is now in its 13th season. It required players to be 18 until the 2023 season, when it lifted the age restriction following a lawsuit filed by 15-year-old Olivia Moultrie. The new youth entry mechanism came with a slew of conditions. Players under 18 must have separate locker room to change and shower. They cannot be waived or traded without consent or selected in expansion drafts. They must live with a parent or guardian. Rosters across the league are now dotted with young talent, many of whom have become some of the biggest stars in the NWSL. It's a change that aligns the league more closely with global development for elite young talent. It also raises important questions as teams grapple with the nuances of rostering young players and what it means for their personal growth and well-being. On the one hand, I don't think an age restriction is the answer, says NWSL Players Association Executive Director Megan Burke, noting that any potential line would come to feel arbitrary, whether drawn at 16, 18, or 21. But on the other, I also think it's important for teams to be well-equipped to support not just the soccer development, but the emotional, social, physical development of these young people. Angel City has another team star in Kennedy Fuller. Originally planning to attend North Carolina, she instead turned pro at 16. She knew it was a big step, but it was one she embraced. I felt so comfortable being uncomfortable at Angel City, says Fuller. I felt comfortable being myself, but in a place where I could be uncomfortable to get better, which was important for me. It was a place where I felt like I was going to develop not only as a player, but also as a person. Recently, Fuller turned 18. That's a milestone for anyone, but especially for a player in the NWSL who gets to celebrate by leaving the youth locker room behind and joining their adult teammates. I graduated, she joked as she mingled in her new home. On the field, things are working out well. Fuller got an assist on Angel City's first goal of the year. It was scored by Alyssa Thompson, who expertly beat out a defender and tucked the ball into the corner of the net. And back on defense was Giselle. Tony Hawk gets back up, page 34. Picture of Tony Hawk doing his thing on his skateboard. How the greatest skateboarder in history has rebounded from countless bruises, breaks, and busted bones. If you skateboard, you're going to fall down. A lot. No one knows this better than Tony Hawk, perhaps the most well-known skateboarder in the world. Hawk has fallen countless times, in big moments and small, like when he became the first person to ever land a 900 in competition. The 900, 2.5 mid-air revolutions, took him years of attempts and officially 11 tries on the ramp at the 1999 X Games before he made history. But falling is something that happens just about every time you skate. So when we asked Hawk for a hand plant off the top of his vert ramp for our cover, he fell then too. It's a huge part of skateboarding, Hawk says. You learn how to fall by default. You also learn how to get back up, even from the really big ones. The gnarliest, most traumatic injury I ever had was breaking my femur, he says. When it happened, it felt like my leg disconnected from my body because I didn't have control of it. I panicked and tried to put it back in place. The bone poked through my hip, and I was in such denial I didn't realize what it was. For someone whose list of broken bones is extensive, Hawk didn't break one until he was 30. Unless you count teeth, I knocked my teeth out plenty of time before then, he says. Knee surgeries, stitches, concussions, the list goes on. So does his list of accomplishments. When Hawk was 14, he declared himself a professional skater. When Hawk was 14, he declared himself a professional skater by checking the box next to pro instead of amateur on a competition registration form. I'm not sure if it mattered, but that's how I went pro, he says. I just checked a different box. By the time he was 16, Hawk was considered one of the best skaters in the world. And at 25, he had won 73 of the 103 pro contests he had ever entered. The 30 he didn't win. He came in second 19 times. Hawk has taken home 10 X Game gold medals, 3 silvers, and 3 bronze. He is the face of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, one of the best-selling video game franchises in the world, and is credited with inventing over 100 tricks. But it took him until he was 31 years old to land the 900, a trick that, to this day, only a small number of skaters can successfully complete. Learning that trick, he says, really beat me up. Plenty of other tricks did, too. The infamous Gorilla Loop is perhaps the weirdest incident in Hawk's injury list due to the fact that he was dressed as an ape when he attempted a full upside-down loop on a skate ramp. It also takes the cake for the most injuries in a single go. A broken thumb, a fractured skull, and a broken pelvis. And a reminder to always, always, always wear a helmet and beware of monkey suits. Gorilla loops and 900s are extreme examples, but to learn a trick, any trick, means hitting the ground. Getting hurt was just something I was willing to put up with to learn how to skate, Hawk says. Not that I enjoyed it, but I was willing to tolerate it to get better. I learned that from my very first injury skateboarding. I didn't come away from it thinking, oh no, I came away from it thinking. That's a lesson learned. To learn that trick, I had to be careful and more confident. Confidence is key. Learning anything new can shake an athlete's self-assurance. But the potential for pain is a big part of skateboarding, simply because falling down is baked into the cake. And while most falling in the sport doesn't result in a major medical event, it is part of the rhythm of learning. Such a huge part of skateboarding is trying something over and over until you land the trick, says Hawk. But the fear of getting hurt is worse than actually getting hurt. Fear paralyzes you and keeps you from getting out of your comfort zone. When Hawk was learning to skateboard, he never thought about things going wrong. I always visualize myself completing the trick, he says. You have to visualize yourself already completing it. If you're hesitant or convinced that you might get hurt, that will be the outcome. Hawk says he is much more calculated about what he's willing to perform now. The 900 is long retired, but the difficulty of tricks is still high. So is his vert ramp. At nearly 14 feet, the ramp in Hawk's office towers over anyone standing at the base. Add this 6'3" frame, his 6'3" frame to that, and he's looking down a significant drop. Hawk has a baseline of tricks he's comfortable with, which he tweaks to push the level of difficulty without putting his body at too big a risk. But when he attempts a trick, even one he knows well, he doesn't land them all. That's just skateboarding. When Hawk has to bail on a landing, the power and speed behind catching major air at the top of a vert ramp rattles the boards and his bones. But to watch him skate is to appreciate one of skateboarding's most impressive careers, one that has been shaped as much by getting back up as it has by landing the world's hardest tricks. The next wave. Hawk's incredible career, all those falls, all those new tricks, paved the way for a deep field of talent in skateboarding today. Reese Nelson, J.D. Sanchez, and Emma Kawakami, who landed an incredible 1080 at only 10 years old. They're all skaters Hawk is excited to watch. So is Australian skater Arissa True, the first female skateboarder to land a 900 in competition. It was amazing to see someone like Arisa do a milestone trick, he says. It was such a huge push forward for women skating and shoving. There are truly no boundaries. Showing there are truly no boundaries. Hawk says the 14-year-old True can land an even harder trick, a switch McTwist, an inverted 540 spun backside all in her reverse stance. Hawk says there's always something to learn, some new technique to master, but he knows the most valuable part of skating lies in the simple act of doing it. If you allow yourself to enjoy the process, skating will teach you life lessons, he says. I think that is the most important thing the sport can give you. Hawk still skates several days a week, but at the age of 56, the Birdman knows his most significant influence on the sport is where he can help take it. I want to advocate for more skate parks, he says. Hawk just finished a project introducing 4 new venues in the Bronx and Brooklyn through his foundation. The skate park project. He also has his eyes on the Olympics, especially since they are coming to Los Angeles in 2028. I want vert skating at the Olympics, he says. It's something that I feel is a big omission right now. After a career of major hits and epic landings, all that injury talk and a morning of big skating, there was one obvious question to pose. If you could replace one body part, what would it be? Sweaty but smiling, the skating phenomenon says, my neck. And here it shows all the different injuries that Tony Hawk has had through the years. So many sprained ankles, 30 stitches, bruised tailbone, broken thumb, cracked rib, hypertended shoulder, broken elbow. Popped hip bursa, broken pelvis, 20 stitches in the shin, they knocked down. Good job, Tony. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.